We're in Genesis chapter 37. Yeah, I'm good now. I forgot to lead the closing prayer a few weeks ago, and Toby bailed me out, so I returned the favor this morning. So that happens pretty easily sometimes. You sit there and forget, and I've done that several times through the years. All right, Genesis 37, we began last week. We had a short class, and so we didn't get very far, so we'll review that quickly and get to where we were. We talked about Genesis 37, verse 2. The Bible says this is the history of Jacob. Even though pretty much most of the rest of Genesis, most of it is about Joseph, but it's truly the history of Jacob, because chapter 38 is going to talk about Judah, but it's talking about the history of Jacob's family, how Israel became to be down into Egypt and all the things that's going to follow in the Bible. This is the history of that. We talked about Joseph. He's 17 years old. He is a shepherd. He's feeding the flock. I introduced an idea to you that maybe you hadn't thought about. Maybe a lot of the problem with Joseph is he had been given authority by his brother. And I truly believe that the more I've studied it. He brought a bad report of two of his brothers to his father while they were tending the flock. And of course, that made those brothers hate him. He would bring the report because his father had given him authority, I believe. Verse 3 tells us that Israel loved him so much that he gave him a coat of many colors. And we said that word, the coat of many colors, comes to an idea of a coat with sleeves. Most people didn't have sleeves. We talked about the fact that it's like the boss has a different color hard hat than everybody else, or whatever it may be. And perhaps this coat symbolizes authority. His brothers hated him so much for all of this. Verse 4 says they could not even speak peaceably to him. They couldn't even find anything good to say about him. And the last thing we talked about was his dreams. He dreamed two dreams, and those dreams were different in the objects of the dreams, but their meaning was the exact same. The first one, his brother's sheaves bowed down to his sheaf, and the second one, the sun and the moon and 11 stars bowed down unto him. And these dreams, there was two of them, because we talked about the number two is for confirmation. And these dreams were given by God to show that Joseph was indeed going to be put over all of them. Joseph was going to come to a place of prominence, and he was going to be second in command in Egypt. Egypt was the world power. So indeed, he was going to be over all these people. And these dreams are going to come true. There was going to come a day that his brothers were going to come down into Egypt to get food, and you remember that because of the years of famine, and they were going to bow down before him. So these dreams indeed did come true. The last thing we talked about was Revelation chapter 12, verse 1. There's a woman clothed with the sun, you know, with all of these stars, and that alludes back to this dream. And it's talking about the church gave birth to Jesus, or the God's people, I should say, gave birth to Jesus and God's people. Their beginnings is right here, the history of Jacob. Jacob named Israel. Israel is the father of the Israelites, so it is God's people that's going to give birth to the man-child. Revelation chapter 12, that man-child is Jesus. What we talked about, one of the last things we said was Joseph is a lot like Jesus because he was rejected for his authority. Jesus, the Pharisees, did not like his claim to have authority, to be from God. Joseph's brothers hated the fact that his father had given him authority. So we're going to look at a lot of things that's just like Joseph and Jesus. In fact, I've wrote down so far what we've seen. So far, we've seen that the comparisons between Joseph and Jesus, both had a miraculous birth. We understand that with Jesus. So how is that with Joseph? If you remember way back, the Lord had closed the womb of Rachel, right? She couldn't have children. She screams out to Jacob, says, "Give me children or I die." And he said, "Am I in place of God? I can't give you children. That's up to God." They prayed, and what did God do? God opened her womb. God gave her the child. It was from God. Jesus was from God. Jesus was loved by his father. We've talked about that before. The first time love's mentioned in the New Testament, it's God speaking from heaven, talking about his beloved son. And Joseph was loved by the father. Joseph was set apart. Joseph was set apart in a special place of prominence by his father. Jesus was set apart in a special place of prominence from his father. They were both to rule over their brethren. That's what these dreams are about. Jesus was here to rule over the Jews. He's the King of the Jews. In fact, it was a sign on the cross, wasn't it? This is the King of the Jews. They did it to ridicule him, but truthfully, he was the King of the Jews. They both were ridiculed for ruling. Again, that sign above Jesus' cross was to ridicule. Joseph's brothers, we're going to see through the rest of this chapter, they're going to ridicule him constantly because he had authority over them. They were both sent by their father to their brethren. Now, you hadn't seen this yet in chapter 37, but that's what we're about to talk about. Both their fathers sent them to their brethren. They were both hated by their brethren without cause, and they were both sold for silver. So that's what we're going to see just in chapter 37, the comparisons between Joseph and Jesus. All right. So when he told this dream, his father rebukes him first, verse 10, but his father kept this matter in mind. Joseph was a man that had experienced dreams before, right? He's seen the vision of the angels ascending and descending. Joseph, or Jacob, understood that God would speak in a way like this to people. So, therefore, he kept it in mind. He realized that God, perhaps, would do this thing. And he knew that God worked what we would say mysterious ways, right? So he kept the matter in mind, and he didn't flat out push it away like Joseph's other brothers did. All right, verse 12, we'll pick back up. It says, then his brothers went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. What do we know about Shechem? That's where Jacob took a detour, right? He told Esau, I'm going to follow you back home. But he wound up, he took a detour in Shechem. And while he's in Shechem, if you'll remember, he bought some land. And while he's there, there was a young man that raped his daughter, remember? And two of his sons, Levi and Simeon, killed the whole place. So Shechem would have been a dangerous place, at least for the children of Israel. And so let's keep that in our minds. His brothers went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, are not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem? Come and I will send you to them. Now Shechem's about 50 miles away from where they are presently living. But Jacob is concerned about his sons feeding the flock there. Now, would you be concerned? You know, I mean, like I said, it's a dangerous place. Two of your sons have killed all the males there. You know they've got a reputation. You know maybe that some of those people had family from other places. You know there's hatred for the sons of Israel in that area. So Jacob has got 10 of his sons feeding the flock in Shechem, and he wants to send somebody to check on him. Who do you pick to send to check on him? You pick somebody that you have utmost confidence in, right? Somebody that has some authority. He says, I want you to go and check on them, and I want you to come and report it back to me. He's a supervisor of sorts, and he's going to do that, and he trusts him. Now, you got a 17-year-old. Are you going to send him 50 miles away to check on somebody in a strange land? Probably not today, are you? Probably not today. Jacob trusted Joseph. He had great trust in him. He knew that he could do it. Now, I have no doubt that he probably sent some servants with him, some animals, whatever it was. But this was a journey that would have taken a few days. Well, Joseph said, here I am. Then he said to him, please go and see if it is well with your brothers and well with the flocks and bring back word to me. So he sent him out of the valley of Hebron, and he went to Shechem. Now, a certain man found him, and there he was, wandering in the field, and the man asked him, what are you seeking? You know, you just imagine, you don't have a phone. You don't have a GPS. That's what we do, right? We get on Google Maps, and we put where we're going, and it's going to tell us how long to get there and what turn to make. He doesn't have any of that. He's just out wandering around in the field, looking, trying to figure out where these guys are. Again, his father owns some land there. Maybe he remembers that. Maybe not. It's been a while. But he's trying to find, and he just so happens to wander up on somebody. And they asked him, what are you looking for? So he said, I am seeking my brothers. Please tell me where they're feeding their flocks. And the man says, they have departed from here, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers, and he found them in Dothan. Now, Dothan's another 20 miles away. So these guys have been traveling around, and just so happened, Joseph ran upon somebody that had talked to him. You think that just so happened to be the case? If you'll realize in this story that we're reading, Nothing just so happens to be the case. God has His hand in every aspect of the story. And don't lose sight of that. When we talk about providence, and you've heard lessons on providence through the years, who do you usually go to? Two people, Esther and Joseph, right? God's hand, God's fingerprints are all in this story. All right. So it says, verse 18. It says, "Now when they saw him afar off, even before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him." Now I mentioned this last week. How could they possibly see him afar off? Have you ever been out, west, and you know, there's just, it's huge. The land is huge, and you can see for miles and miles and miles. You know, you can do that a few places here. But can you imagine seeing somebody afar off? How are you going to know it's Joseph? What? He's wearing that coat, right? He's wearing something that distinguishes him from everybody else. And if you already hate him, and you just happen to look up and you see that coat, you're going to be enraged probably, aren't you? You're going to be enraged. You're like, here I am, I'm 70 miles away from home, and our dad has sent this guy to check on us. Now, you know that's what's going through their minds. They think he doesn't trust us enough to be out here and to do the right thing, so they've got to send, I mean, you just imagine all the things that's going through their minds and coming out their mouths. They're angry. And the Bible says when they see him, they conspire against him to kill him. Is killing people above these guys? No, we've already said Levi and Simeon took out a whole town, didn't he? Didn't bother them one bit. So killing people is not above these guys, but you know, killing people and killing your sibling, now some of you might say that might be easier. That's between you and them. But you know, it should be something that would cause you to think more, right? At least. You know, a stranger, somebody that's raped your sister, okay. Maybe you want to take vengeance. This is your brother. This is your brother, your flesh and blood. You know, you should love your father. You should know that your father loves him. You should not want to disappoint your father. You should not want to grieve your father. All of these things should be going through their mind, but none of these are going through their mind. They conspire against him to kill him. Then they said to one another, "Look, this dreamer is coming." They hated him for his dreams. We already said that his father had given him authority, and these dreams did what? It confirmed that even more. These dreams to them were, you know, if they didn't think there was anything to it, why would it bother them? Right? If there was nothing to it and he had no authority and he's the younger brother and they were not worried at all, the dreams wouldn't have bothered them. They'd laughed at him, right? You're crazy. You know, you're crazy. But they really, it really bothered them. It really bothered them because they could see this whole thing coming true more and more every day. They knew that he was going to be over them. It says, verse 20, "Come therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit, and we will say some wild beast has devoured him. We shall see what will become of his dreams." Now, if you're wandering around, now you picture this, take yourself all the way back, this is several thousand years ago. Would a wild beast be something you would be worried about anyways? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it would be. You know, I'm sure wild beasts would have killed people. You know, a bear, a cougar, I don't know what it was in this area, but this was a solution in their minds that would make sense. This is something that happens from time to time, and we could get away with it this way. Let's kill him, throw him in a pit, and we'll just tell our dad a wild beast killed him. But notice the last thing they say. We'll see what will become of his dreams. Again, those dreams are haunting these guys. They said, "We'll see if he's going to be in charge of all of us. We're going to bow down to him." And they're thinking, "We'll never bow down to him. We don't want any part of that." Verse 21, it says, "But Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands. And he said, 'Let us not kill him.' And Reuben said to them, 'Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit which is in the wilderness, and do not lay a hand on him, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to his father.'" Now, if you remember, we looked, I believe it was last week, 1 Chronicles chapter 5, verses 1 through 3, talks about that Joseph had been given the birthright that belonged to Reuben because of the Reuben sleeping with his father's concubine. So Reuben is the firstborn, and Reuben perhaps knows that his birthright has been taken from him But when you're the oldest, where does the responsibility lie with the family? On you, right? If you're the oldest of the siblings in your household, you've been given more responsibility. I was the oldest in my household, and everything was my fault, right? And still the case here. Reuben knew if something happened, him being the oldest, even though his birthright's taken away, his father's going to come down the hardest on him. So he's the one that says, hey, I got an idea. Let's not kill him. Let's throw him in the pit. Reuben's like, hey, I'll slip back out. I'll get him. And maybe Reuben's thinking in his mind, if I take him back to my father, maybe, just maybe, I can get that birthright back. You think that could be a case? I mean, you know that's probably in his mind. He doesn't want to lose that. That's very important. You get more than anybody else. But Reuben is bold. Think about this. His two younger brothers, Levi and Simeon, had wiped out people with a sword. They were brutal, brutal men. Reuben's not afraid to stand up to all of them. There's 10 of them there. Reuben is standing up to 9 of them and says, hey, we're not going to do what you said. We're going to do something different. Well, that's what, or at least Reuben thinks is going to happen. Verse 23, it says, so it came to pass when Joseph had come to his brothers that they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the tunic of many colors that was on him. Then they took him, and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty, and there was no water in it. Joseph's walking up to his brothers. He thinks he's walking up to check on them, saying, hey guys, how y'all doing? Just checking. My dad sent me to see how things are going. I got to bring word back. They don't receive him. This was a violent scene. Can you imagine all those guys grabbing hold of him? They're ripping that coat off of him, and they see a pit over, it's a well, a cistern, maybe your Bible says, and they just chuck him in there. Chuck him in there. It's a violent scene. It's something that should not have happened. But I want you to notice that God provided right here. You say, how in the world did God provide? A well is supposed to have what? If they had thrown him in a well with water, what would happen to him? He would have drowned. Just so happened where they were, there's a dry well. And just so happened they threw him in the dry well. I wrote in my Bible, I wrote a line out, and I put God provided. All right, verse 25. And they sat down to eat a meal. Now, you saw your brother come, and he comes up to you, you rip his coat off of him, you want to kill him, and you throw him in a dry well. What is he doing in that well? He's yelling, he's crying for help. In fact, I know that's what he was doing. Not because it says it right here, but I wrote in my Bible, Genesis 42, verse 21, those brothers, when they have met Joseph in Egypt, they recall this event. And they recall this event and say, when he was crying out to help, for us to help him, they didn't listen. There's no guilt. There's no remorse, there's no shame, there's nothing. They do all these things to the brother, and then they just sit down and eat a meal. They're trading lunch, right? It's like, okay, we got what we wanted. Everything's okay. They don't care. They don't care. These guys are brutal men. It says, then they lifted up their eyes and looked, and there was a company of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels bearing spices, balm, and myrrh on their way to carry them down into Egypt. I drew me another little line in my Bible, and I wrote, God provides. We said God's providential hand is in every bit of this story. You think it just so happened that when they throw him into a pit, it just so happens while they're eating, a band of Ishmaelite traders happen to just go through. They're in the middle of nowhere. And it just so happens that that's, no, God made it happen. Not miraculously, but providentially, those guys went right down through there. Well, when those guys come right down through there, Judah hatches a plan, verse 26. So Judah said to his brothers, what profit? You can underline in your Bible or draw a box around it. Draw a box around profit. What profit is there if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh. And his brothers listened. You know, Reuben wanted to save Joseph to save his own skin, right? He says, I'm the oldest. My father's put me in charge. I can't, you know, maybe he loved his father. Maybe, you know,
So he had some good motivation. What was Judah's motivation? Greed. What profit? If you have something, you know, something old at your house, and you throw it away or you give it away, does that benefit you? What if you sell it? You get something out of it, right? So Judah's thinking, if we just leave him here to die, what do we get? If we kill him, what do we get? What if we just sell him? Well, then we get some money. At least we get something good out of our brother. See, they don't think they've ever got anything good out of their brother. They hate him. So Judah's line of reasoning is, hey, if we'll sell him, we'll get something good. So Judah is thinking about profit. And it just so happened to be Ishmaelite. Ishmael would be the great uncle of these guys. Ishmael was their grandfather's brother. So these guys are descendants from Ishmael. And it just so happens they wander through. So their brothers, they listen. Perhaps Judah had some pull with these brothers. But you know, when they think about selling him, it got rid of their problem without murder, without having to hide evidence, and they made some profit. So it benefited them in the long haul. It says, then the Midianite traders passed by, so the brothers pulled Joseph up and lifted him up out of the pit, and they sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver, and they took Joseph to Egypt. Leviticus chapter 27, verse 5, in the law of Moses, a male from 5 to 20 years old could be sold for a slave for 20 shekels of silver, and a female for 10 shekels of silver. So before that law was ever instituted and all was written down, it was already taking place. He was sold for the price of a slave, which was 20 shekels of silver. But I want you to think about this. Which one would be worse a lot of times, slavery or death? Slavery. If I had to choose in being someone's slave or just taking me out right now, I'm probably going to choose just take me on out, right? Because a lot of times slavery was punishment every day. Every day of your life, you're having to deal with this and this and this. So it wasn't like they were giving him the more gracious option. In fact, what they were doing to him was potentially more cruel. Now listen, it's going to work out great in the end. But nobody knows that but God, right? Nobody knows that but God. They're just thinking of a profit. And they're going to get a profit. All right, so they sold him. Verse 29, then Reuben returned to the pit, and indeed Joseph was not in the pit. And he tore his clothes and returned to his brothers, and he said, the lad is no more, and where shall I go? Again, this whole idea of he's the firstborn, he has the responsibility. He says, I can't go back home now. What am I going to do? You know, he doesn't know. For whatever reason, he wasn't present when the sale of Joseph had taken place. He just comes back and he's gone. And his brother's going to have to tell him what happens. So verse 31, it says, so then they took Joseph's tunic, and they killed a kid of the goats, and they dipped the tunic in the blood. Then they sent the tunic of many colors, and they brought it to their father. And they said, we have found this. Do you know whether it is your son's tunic or not? So they hatched this plan, and it goes back to what they began with to start with. They were going to kill him, and they were going to say a wild animal did it, right? Well, they didn't kill him. They sold him, but still the plan's the same. A wild animal got him. But can you imagine these guys bringing this coat of many colors, covered in blood, back to their father and say, hey, do you know where this, they knew exactly who it was from. They were being deceitful all along, and apparently they didn't have a whole lot of love and respect for their father, apparently. But, to be fair, did Jacob have a whole lot of love and respect for his father? Pulled the same deceit, didn't he? Same deceit. He camouflaged himself as Esau and went in and lied to his father. All right, it says, and he recognized it and said, it is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Without a doubt, Joseph is torn to pieces. He let his imagination run away, which we would normally do, right? You find a coat covered in blood. What do you think? He's gone. A wild beast has torn him to pieces. Then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth on his waist, and mourned for his son many days. And all of his sons and all of his daughters arose to comfort him. Do you think they really tried to comfort him? How are you going to try to comfort him when you know the truth? Again, all deceitful. But he refused to be comforted, and he says, "For I shall go down to the grave to my son in mourning." Thus his father wept for him. Now the Midianites had sold him to Egypt, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard. All right, a few things here. They allowed his father, their father, to believe a lie. It was a cruel plan. They had no love and respect for their father. I wrote this note: Abraham and Jacob's sons were both taken and given back. Abraham and Jacob's, both their sons were taken and given back. Abraham's was Isaac. God says, in essence, I'm taking him from you. You're going to sacrifice him. So Abraham went all the way to the point of drawing a knife, was going to kill him, and his son was given back. Jacob's son was taken away from him. In his mind that he was, in Abraham's mind, Isaac was taken from him. But Jacob's son was given back. In both instances, God used it to show salvation. Salvation is always accomplished through great sacrifice, right? And in the same manner, God's son was taken from him, and he was what? Given back. God's son was taken. He died upon the cross. He was buried in the ground, and he rose the third day. All right, just a couple things. Joseph was sold in Egypt to Potiphar. I wrote another note in my Bible. God provided. Could Joseph have been sold to somebody else in Egypt? You think it just so happened that he was sold to Potiphar? No. Is that miraculous? No. Nothing in the story of Joseph is miraculous except the dreams. The dreams that he had, the dreams that were had in prison that he interpreted. Everything else is God's providential acts working. But Joseph had to learn to be the man that he was going to be through difficulties. James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. If we'll have patience, have its perfect work, we'll be complete and lacking nothing." Does anybody fit that narrative any better than Joseph? Count it all joy when you fall into various trials. How many trials did Joseph have to go through? Lot, more than we will ever fathom. But what did those trials do to him? Could he have been bitter? He could have been very bitter, right? "My brothers hated me, they threw me in the pit, they sold me into slavery, Potiphar's wife falsely accused me and found myself in prison." I mean, over and over and over, he could have been bitter, but what did he do? He counted it all joy that he fell into various trials, knowing the testing of his faith produced patience. Was Joseph a great and mighty leader? How did he get there? Through hardship. Through hardship. So God used those hardships to make him the man that he was. God sold him in Egypt to Potiphar. That goes back to chapter 15, verses 13 and 14. God told Abraham, he says, "Your descendants will be strangers in a land." They'll be strangers in a land. How did that happen? Right here is the beginnings of it, right? This is the history of Jacob. So this is the beginning of that. God is working. I want you to notice something. God is working in the lives of the sons of Jacob despite their sinful decisions. You realize that? Sometimes, again, and we've said this over and over and over again, God is working in spite of them. God works today in spite of us. Do we do everything that God would have us to do? Never. Does God still work in spite of that? Yeah. It seems as if this whole story that is played out, it seems as if everybody's working against God, doesn't it? I mean, think about it. Every decision, every action that they're taking is working against him, but God is still working anyway. The last thing, you know, Joseph was hated without cause. Joseph was rejected. And you realize Jesus was rejected too, and you and I will be rejected. 1 Peter 1, 20 through 25 talks about that. John 15 talks about that. 1 Timothy 3, 12 talks about that. If we follow him, we will be rejected. And it's not necessarily with a good cause, but it is what it is. I appreciate your attention.